Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, my name's Stuart Miles and welcome to the Apocalypse Podcast. Apple has held its September California streaming event revealing new iPhones, new Apple Watches and even new iPads. But what do we make of the announcements? Should you be excited or is it just more of the same from the world's most successful company? Joining me to discuss the big announcements from the virtual event, Apocalypse Rick Henderson and Britta O'Boyle. So let's start with you, Rick, and the iPads. What did Apple announce and what do we make of the new models?
This was singularly the biggest surprise at this event. Apple rarely ever announces iPads during an iPhone event. We actually expected them in October. Mm. But the big product that they actually started the whole event with was an update to the standard iPad model, the model that is good for schools and for younger children. Not a huge upgrade, to be honest. No. A better front-facing camera, some better face tracking, that kind of new feature that they added with the iPad Pro and iPad Air. But it's essentially the same device, slightly better processor, works with the Apple Pencil.
But then they suddenly went, aha, we've got the iPad Mini.
Yeah, that's the thing that everybody's come away talking about more than anything else. Mm. is the latest iPad Mini, and it looks stunning. It's called the iPad Mini, but it's really an iPad Mini Air or iPad Air Mini.
Yeah, because that's the thing, isn't it? I don't know whether this is pitched as a an Air Mini or a Pro Mini. You know, when we talk to Apple, they're like, well, it's its own product.
I mean, it does fit into both, doesn't it? Because it's got that center stage feature that was introduced originally on the Pro model. So I guess it does fit into both, but I would say it's probably more an Air Mini because it's pretty much identical, just smaller. So.
Yeah. Cool. And so I think that's, do we think this is going to sell that one?
Without a shadow of a doubt. At least two people I spoke to from after last night immediately talked about ordering one. There's something, as an iPad Pro user for many years, from the first models that were released, or at least the first ones where the touch button, the front facing button was removed. Mm. The full screen experience is extraordinary, and I think the iPad Mini will benefit from that. Certainly it looks sexier. It's got all the color options, but mainly it's got the processing, the cunning features like the Touch ID button on the side. There's so much about it that just seems a massive upgrade if you've already got an iPad Mini.
I think it's a huge upgrade. I think there's that. I also think if you're an artist or something like that, this feels to me more of like a doodle kind of device.
Yeah, it's also compatible with the second generation Apple Pencil, which is the better of the two pencils. So I really think that will be a big selling point. And it's USB-C, which means it's compatible with cables you've probably got lying around your house already. So, it was a massive surprise. We didn't expect it. It looks fantastic. And for me, it was the biggest takeaway from the entire event.
Well, there we go. We don't need to talk to you again today, Rick. Thanks very much. No. Okay, so let's talk about something else that had a new full screen experience, Britt. The Apple Watch. What happened on this front?
Well, so this was a little bit I feel like disappointment would be a bit harsh, but I was expecting a little bit more from the Apple Watch this year, if I'm honest. The rumours weren't right. It didn't go to a square or a flat edge design like the rest of Apple's products have done the last year. But it does have a bigger screen. I think it said it was 20% bigger than the Series 6, which makes it 50% bigger than the Series 3. So I guess if you're a Series 3 user, it's certainly a big screen upgrade. I know Rick's got a Series 3, so he he definitely thinks it's a good upgrade there. But in terms of internals, not much has really changed from what I can gather. You get similar features to the Series 6, and you get faster charging, which is obviously useful, especially if you use it a lot for workouts and stuff. But otherwise, it's quite similar, sort of very similar in terms of specifications, apart from the display and the fact that it's more durable because it's got an IPX6 rating this time, which means it's better when it comes to dusty environments. So,
do you think it's just because we don't need that much from a watch and therefore we've already hit that peak?
Yes,
or probably. Is there something else underlying here?
Yeah, I think you probably are. You probably hit the nail on the head there. There is definitely. I mean, how much can you really do with a watch on your wrist? Samsung obviously launched some interesting features on their latest watch, and Apple haven't followed suit here. Though the features that Apple do use, they do work well and they are good. I was hoping for a little bit more in terms of on the sleep tracking front. And I was hoping for just a little bit, something to entice you to go and buy it if you've got the Series 6. But I'm not sure that it gave you that quite.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because the Series 5, you know, the Series 6 was very similar to the Series 5. Now, you know, obviously I think that screen, I think it's going to be difficult because I think you'll have to see that screen. And they talked about how it's, you know, obviously very edge to edge. There's hardly any bezel.
Yeah, it
seems to, from the promo videos and the presentation, and we haven't seen one yet, but it seems to kind of curve around the edge, which I think will be really interesting to see, and whether the watch faces take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You know, and what that does from a design and sort of aesthetics approach on the watch and how that helps. But, you know, we're kind of getting into those very minute detail changes, which if you're really after that tech, it doesn't feel like you're going to be fulfilled this year.
No, and I agree with you, and I think that it may be something you need to see in order to be able to fully understand the difference between the models. And I suspect an edge-to-edge display will look lovely, and obviously you get the full keyboard as well, so that'll be good for typing, because I do sometimes reply on my watch. I know I'm probably in the minority there, but I do if I've left my phone downstairs and I'm sorting out the kids and I've got it on my watch and it's urgent. But otherwise, I think you'd probably be okay with the Series 6 this year, and then hope that when it comes to the Series 8, that flat edge design might work its way through, maybe.
Yeah, you're still gunning for the flat edge, aren't you?
I love it. I thought it looked great. I love it on the phones. I love it on the iPads. I feel like it would just be a nice different change.
Rick, do you have the same longing for a flat edge design?
I did like the idea of it, but at the same time, I'm in a slightly different boat in the fact that I see the Series 7 for me as a Series 3 user a massive upgrade.
Yeah,
I've been holding off for quite some time to upgrade. Because I'm old school. I believe a watch should last you for years and years and years. My previous watch to my Apple Watch was well over a decade old. But at the same time, is the Apple Watch 3 has recently started to not get full updates. It gets the latest Watch OS, but for example, the last update, you didn't get all of the faces that are available to the Series 6. So the Apple Watch 3 is slightly now being left behind. So I see the Series 7 as a huge upgrade for me. That screen is a real key. And also, of course, I get all the other benefits with the improved processing, etc. But the biggest, I think, the weirdest part for me was that Apple's still selling the Series 3. I think that was actually a strange bit at the end of the Apple Watch part of their presentation, was that they said that there will be three models on sale from later in autumn, because the Series 7 has been slightly delayed. There's the SE, which I really like. I've seen that quite a bit. The Series 7, obviously, and the Series 3. And as I've just said, the Series 3 is sort of like being hampered quite a lot. So if you're going to go for a cheaper version of the Apple Watch, why buy a Series 3? Buy the SE. At least it's getting the full Watch OS.
I think they're keeping it around because it's just so popular. And it hits that price point, and therefore, you know, it's a great entry point into that, you know, smartwatch sort of experience without kind of, you know, starting to hit the high values of what I suspect the Series 7 will be, because, you know, by the time you add the nice watch straps and all the other stuff. So I think it's difficult, though. I can totally see what you mean. I'm surprised that they've kept it. I would have thought that the Watch SE was could have been dropped to take that new 3 price. Yeah. But clearly something's happened that it might be that we have to wait another year. And then, you know, probably Series 3 will fade out next year and it will be replaced by the Watch SE instead.
Yeah, I think that could well be the case. It was a little surprising. And I would advise people look at the SE. If they're looking for an entry-level Apple Watch that will last a few years, I would look at the SE instead, personally.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there we go. So we've agreed on that one. Right now, the main meat, if you like, of a September Apple event has always been about iPhones. And so let's talk about those now. We've got 4 new models. The iPhone 13, iPhone 13 mini, iPhone 13 Pro, iPhone 13 Pro Max. As Tim Cook would say, let's talk about iPhone. So, Rick, what's happened here?
Well, I kind of covered the iPhone 13 and iPhone 13 mini as part of the event. And they're par for the course, really. There's not a huge amount different to generationally on these as well. The whole event, apart from the iPad surprises, I felt that quite a lot, is it was about incremental change. It wasn't about revolution. And the iPhone 13 and I was surprised there was an iPhone 13 mini. There'd been an awful lot of chatter that that Apple might ditch the mini model under claims that the last one didn't sell. But I personally, I have friends with the mini and they love it.
They absolutely loved
that. Yeah. So I was actually genuinely surprised by all those rumors, because I do know people that much prefer that very small form factor. But with the iPhone 13, I mean, the biggest changes, as far as we could tell, were a slight change in the formation of the camera on the rear, possibly to fit in those slightly improved sensors. The camera lenses are now run diagonally across the unit rather than in a straight line. There's a slightly different kind of look to the surround of the phones, but I mean, you know, it's
that's because it's made of plastic bottles.
Yeah, made of plastic bottles. There's little antenna strips.
Yeah.
But it's very similar. Obviously, it's more powerful. It'll run better. Would I upgrade from an iPhone 12? Very unlikely. But I possibly would if I only had an iPhone 13 still.
Britt, do you feel the same with the 13s?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there definitely isn't, there wasn't as much change as, again, like the watch, there wasn't as much change as maybe some may have expected. But this probably was an S year, and that is typically the case, that you get an upgraded processor. I know they didn't call it the 12S, but, I mean, that is essentially what it is. You get, with the Pros, there's a little bit of a difference, because you obviously get a whole new camera system, which means that the upgrade is a slightly more sort of obvious one, I guess. Whereas with the, as Rick said, there's just the slight formation change of the camera lens on the back, some new colours and a new processor. And that's kind of the
reason. Yeah, and I suppose, I mean, you've got the smaller notch, but I don't know whether people will really notice that. I think the really telling thing here for me with this was, as Apple has always been very keen to tell us how fast the processor is. And this time around, we've got the A15 Bionic. So we've got an upgrade, and it was kind of, normally it's like it's 2x faster than last time, or it's, you know, 28% faster on the GPU, or all these kind of things. This year, there didn't seem to be any of those graphs, any of those comments. It was just, it's faster than other things. But we're not going to tell you what the other things are.
Yeah.
So it just felt that it was kind of, it wasn't, it, again, I think there's obviously been a lot of movement on Apple Silicon from that perspective. Obviously it's getting faster, but I think we're starting to see that moment where certainly for a regular phone, and let's fact, I know the iPhone 13 or iPhone 12 was, you know, certainly kind of slightly better than a regular phone in terms of power and performance and all the other stuff. It just feels that they set the bar very high last year, And for the customers that kind of want an iPhone and want it to be fast and powerful, but don't need to go the whole pro level, trying to sell them, hey, you've got another faster processor this year round, is quite a hard marketing sell, because you kind of, you're talking to customers that just want things to work rather than necessarily worrying about performance.
Yeah, absolutely. What I was pleased about, though, is that they mentioned a feature called photographic styles, which I thought originally was only on the Pro models. And then I later found out that it was also on the iPhone 13.
Oh, that is good. I thought that was only the Pro models as well. So
yeah, no, I believe it's on all of them, which I thought was good, because that way you don't actually sacrifice a great deal by getting the standard model, which I think is important, because that's sort of hitting the target person as well, really, rather than just the pro users. Obviously, if you pay more money, then it's great that you get some extra things, as you should. But I also think it's important that the standard model gives you what you would expect from an iPhone as well. So
that's possibly my takeaway from it, was that it kind of bridged the gap between last year's pro models and this year's pro models. It's more capable. It's more like last year's Pro models. The photography certainly seems to have been improved quite dramatically on the standard models. Not quite as much as the new Pro, but yeah. And that, as far as I'm aware, it sells the phone probably more than anything else, is the quality of the photos that you can take with it.
And so let's talk about the pros. Obviously, we've talked about 13s, and so the pros are there. They've had new features as well. Do you want to talk us through those, Britt?
So they seemingly have, well, they've got an entire new camera lens setup, all three new lenses, as we sort of alluded to earlier, which is probably the biggest takeaway and the biggest difference in them. They've also got a slightly faster GPU. They've got 5 cores instead of 4 cores, like the iPhone 13 and the standard model. Otherwise, they're sort of, I mean, they've still got this slightly different finish with the stainless steel over the aluminium. But as Rick said, I do think that there's definitely a smaller bridge between the two models this year than there was last year, which I actually think is great, because it does mean that the standard user doesn't sort of sacrifice too much by getting the cheaper model. But obviously you do gain some things by going to the Pro, which I think a lot of it is to do with the photography side of things.
See, I was going to say the opposite thing to all of you. I was going to say I thought the gap had grown. Because you got the ProMotion. I still can't believe they chose that name.
Yes, of course. There is
the ProMotion display.
Yeah, there is the display.
You've got the 6x telephoto zoom. Is that on both of them?
Although it's only, it's 6x optical zoom range. So I think that 6x.
For macro modes, isn't it? Because you get the macro modes, but
which you don't get on the thing, which is really cool, actually. That looks like it's going to be quite an interesting feature, especially since you don't need that additional pointless macro camera that some other phones have put on their phones to be able to get that. So at least you get the feature without having to have like four lenses on the back of your phone, because I think another lens on the back of the iPhone Pro may have been a bit much in that little
yeah thing. and specifically just for macro shots, because I mean I've found whenever I've had macro modes on any phones, or you get a macro lens on an old school camera all those years ago, you know, you'd go, wow, let's take a banknote out of my wallet and let's take a picture of the text that I can never read, because that's exciting. Or like, look at this spider really up close, woo! And then like, that's the first day, and then day 825 later, you're like, what? I've never taken anything closer than like 3 meters away.
Yeah, exactly. So at least it's automatic, I believe, unless I'm wrong there, but I think it's an automatic thing. As you get close up, it switches to it. So I think that's pretty cool. But as you said, the display is obviously different as well, which certainly for gamers, I guess, if you're playing things like that.
And I know our editor, Chris, disagrees with this, but I've never had the want to play anything in 120 hertz on a phone. I always thought 60 hertz, there's such fractional difference that you can tell between 60 hertz and 120 hertz, in my opinion, I don't think 120 hertz really matters that much on a phone. It does on a video games console, but that's a very different argument. I'm not that bothered between the difference between the iPhone 13 and the iPhone 13 Pro, for example.
I think the big difference I've noticed when using it on the iPad Pro, which is already, that technology has been there for a couple of years now, is when you're scrolling the web and things like that, you don't kind of, you know, when you watch sometimes on a cheaper TV, you get that juddering across the screen. The promotion stuff allows it when you start scrolling the web or through Instagram or things like that, just it's able to cope with the movement across the screen a lot better. And so I think while I agree with you on the gaming side of things, I don't think people will necessarily notice, Fortnite, and well, you can't even play Fortnite on the iPhone, but you know, like Call of Duty I don't think you'll necessarily notice the 120 hertz there as much as you perhaps would like to, and certainly not as much as you would on a console. I think for simple things like just scrolling through a web page, reading Pocket Lint, you know, or going through Twitter or things like that, I think you'll notice it, sort of subconsciously notice that it is better.
Yeah, I suppose, but and things like Apple Pencil response and things like that. Obviously, that would help, the less latency. But
yeah.
I just don't think that on a small device, that small, it would really make a massive difference, although it is quite a nice thing to have. It's one of those many things that they chuck stats on and say, oh, it's got this, and you go, oh, well, that would be nice to have. For me, the biggest thing generationally for the iPhone 13 Pro devices is that the Pro Max and the Pro seem to be the same this time around in terms of photography. Last time, I don't know if people remember, the iPhone 12 Pro and 12 Pro Max had slight differences. The 12 Pro Max had slightly better camera technologies involved. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, you're right. The 12 Pro Max did have the sensor stabilization feature that now is on all four of the models, which is another thing that shows that the gap is being bridged slightly, because the standard models are offering that sensor stabilization as well now, and across two of the lenses rather than just one. There was only one last year. But yeah, no, you're right. The two Pro models are now back in line with each other, like they were on the 11 and the 11, or the 11 Pro and the 11 Pro Max. So, but I think that's a good thing, because I don't think that you should have to sacrifice features just because you want the slightly smaller display. So I actually think that that's a good thing that they've done that, definitely.
One of the final things, and I think on the iPhone is, and actually all the devices that have been announced, is battery life. That seemed to be for me the big buzzword.
Yeah.
More battery, bigger batteries, more batteries. Why do we think that is, Britt?
Well, I think you need it, don't you? That's the issue. You definitely need it. People do so much more on their phones these days that no matter how much you think that phone is going to last the whole day, if you're playing games, you're watching, you're streaming, you're answering all your messages and stuff, it does slowly go down, and then you don't want to get to the end of the day and you've got no battery on your phone. So more battery, no one's going to say no to more battery, are they, on their phones? Everyone wants more when it comes to battery. So, I mean, I guess that's part of the reason why they've chosen to do it. I think it's 1.5 hours on the smaller models and then 2.5 on the larger models. That's quite a lot if you put that into the context of the day. That'll get you from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. to make your train rather than...
Sorry, I think the timing was great on that, because ultimately we're all coming out of lockdowns around the world, and starting to go back to sort of like a pseudo-normal way of living, that if you're out and about a lot more, you're going to be using your phone a lot more and your watch a lot more, and less opportunities to charge them in between uses. So I think the timing of adding increased battery life couldn't have been better timed.
Yeah, I was hoping they'd put it on the Series 7, but it's got the same battery as the Series 6. It just means you could just charge it faster because it comes with the USB-C connection instead now, or the cables USB-C. So I was a bit disappointed that the battery life of the Series 7 hasn't been expanded a little bit, but at least you can charge it faster, so you can get more.
Now, There's a little time left to talk about everything else. But then there's not much else, was there? Was that a surprise, Britt?
Yes, I expected AirPods, if I'm honest. I thought the third generation of the standard AirPods would maybe make themselves known at this event. But I guess because we got iPads instead, which was, as Rick said, was sort of a bit of a curveball. I suppose they didn't want to bombard us with too much. So yeah, there wasn't really anything else, was there? Oh, except for Fitness Plus, actually. They added Pilates, which is great, right? Who doesn't love Pilates in their life?
Yeah, exactly. Although I found with the Fitness Plus stuff, the core programs and stuff were very Pilates focused anyway.
True.
So I don't know. I'm curious of whether they're going to change the core stuff to just become Pilates, or whether they'll still keep Jessica jumping up and down.
I kind of hope that they do separate, because Pilates is not cheap to sign up to if you're looking at doing courses of it and stuff. So actually, if you are able to pay the £10 a month fee to then be able to do that alongside the other strength stuff, and I use rowing on Fitness Plus, and I think it's great. So I think it's a good thing that they've got Pilates on there now. Even if it expands over time and there's not that much to begin with, it's a good start, right?
Well, that's it for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, pip pip. Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.